Our first public hearing is conditional use number 1967, Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated.
This is an application to consider the conditional use of land in a MR medium density residential district for a wastewater treatment plant to treat off-site waste to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on the parcels containing 10.26 acres, more or less, lying south of Road 283, also known as Cedar Grove Road, and being east of Road 277, also referred to as Robinsonville Road, and being identified on the tax maps as tax map ID 3-34, map 11, parcels 83 and 83.04. For the benefit of the record, those parties in attendance haven't reviewed the file. The applicants did provide an exhibit booklet, and it contains a description of the conditional use application and property descriptions, a proposed pump station and force main system map, wastewater treatment plant site plans, agreements, etc., for service to the retreat, capacity studies, evaluations, and a DENREC permit, a wastewater CPCN, a no violation letter from DENREC, a schedule of construction to connections, a listing of Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated owned and operated wastewater treatment plants, cost of connection and user charges, and suggested proposed findings of fact and conditions of approval. We did receive yesterday, August 7th of 2013, county engineering comments. Those comments were in the form of a memorandum advising that the site proposed to be served owned by S&B Land LLC and referenced to as Phase 1 Coastal Club is located in the Gosley Creek planning area, that wastewater capacity is available for the project, that Ordinance 38 construction is required, that service connection charges will apply, that at present source service to the Coastal Club is available through the West Rehoboth Sanitary Sewer District, although the performance of the Gosley Creek planning study could result in Coastal Club being included in the Gosley Creek Sewer District, that the project is capable of being annexed into a county-operated sanitary sewer district, that conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study and or the Gosley Creek Planning Study is required, that the wastewater treatment facility is located in the Gosley Creek planning area for sewer service, that if the application is not approved, Sussex County is willing and able to provide permanent sewer service to the Coastal Club development through its existing and proposed infrastructure. But if this application is considered for approval, then the County Engineering Department recommends that conditions include, one, all improvements for collection, transmission, and treatment and disposal of wastewater shall be constructed and maintained in accordance with the standards of the Sussex County Engineering Department, the regulation of the Delaware Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, and any other governmental agency with jurisdiction over the use on the site or any modification thereto. Two, within 90 days of the approval of this application, the applicant shall submit to the County Engineering Department a regional plan that shows all the areas and or subdivisions to be served by the wastewater treatment and disposal facility. Said plan shall include technical support that demonstrates that capacity exists at the treatment and disposal facility to serve the areas and or subdivisions listed in the plan. Three, the facility shall not receive wastewater for treatment and disposal from any property or parcel that is located within the Sussex County sewer planning area, territory, or sewer district, excepting therefrom those properties or parcels which are approved for service as evidenced by CPCN being issued by the Public Service Commission by or before August 8th of 2013. And four, wastewater service to the Coastal Club through this conditional use shall be limited only to those homes located in Phase 1, totaling 156 EDUs and amenities, not to exceed 153 EDUs in accordance with a table shown under tab 8 of the exhibit book included in this Sussex County Planning and Zoning file for this conditional use application number 1967. Other phases shall be served by the proposed Wandendale Wastewater Treatment and Disposal Facility, and should that option not be available when additional EDUs are requested by the developer, then a connection to a county sewer district shall be permitted. And we were also advised that a concept plan shall be required to be submitted to the county engineering department. And gentlemen, that's all I have.
All right, sir, we thank you. Before we start, I just want to say that if there's anyone here with an interest in this application who may not be familiar with the area, the drawings and so on, as you can see, they're set up over here to my right, but they're rather difficult to see from where you're sitting. So if there's anyone who would like to get up and walk over, take a look, a closer look, please feel free to do so. We just ask that while you're there that you not have any conversation, because we're going to be proceeding with our public hearing. And with that, the chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of Tidewater Environmental Services, Inc., my name is Dennis Schrader, and I am attorney for the application. I have with me Jerry Esposito, a gentleman with whom I think you all have familiarity, and I also have Rich Polk, an engineer that's involved in the process of this particular application. As you have had explained to you by Mr. Lank, this is an expansion, if you will, or an extension of a previously existing wastewater treatment plant in order to allow for the collection of wastewater from the coastal club, transmit it to the retreat, and allow that to be treated and disposed of at the retreat's wastewater treatment plant. That plant is owned and operated by Tidewater Environmental Services. The site at the retreat contains 9.89 acres and 0.37 acres, and the wastewater treatment site is in a medium-density residential community. The current use of the property, obviously, is a wastewater treatment plant, and what we're looking to do is to provide public utility for the treatment of wastewater, and that is required, or it requires, a conditional use pursuant to 115.22 of the code. We have provided you with a number of exhibits that Mr. Lank has described for you that will be referred to throughout the evening. I think if you take a look at the two documents or the two photographs and maps that are on my left, your right, you will see that the large gray area to the left of the upper picture is that area which is Coastal Club. The other is the retreat. And Mr. Pope, if you'll show them the proposed path, it will be collected, treated, and, transmitted and taken to the retreat for treatment. Tidewater has currently the Certificate of Public Convenience and necessity for this, and the capacity of the plant is 165 EDUs that will be available to cover phase one of the Coastal Club. I'm going to have Mr. Esposito come forward and give you some explanations about this project, how this all works, what the effect will be on the wastewater treatment plant at the retreat, the construction schedule and what have you, and then I'll have Mr. Polk, who is the design person, explain to you how we got this 9,800 square or lineal foot pipeline and how that works. I'll be back, and then we'll be glad to entertain any or all questions that you may have concerning the project.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure we're clear on something, because Dennis, you cited 115.22, which is the AR district of the code. What's the zone?
This is an MI district.
Okay, I just want to make sure we didn't have any issues with advertising or anything.
Okay.
Scared me for a second.
Sorry. Thank you. Mr. Esposito?
Yep. Thank you. Good evening. I'm Gerard Esposito, president of Tidewater Environmental Services, Incorporated. I'm also president of its regulated water utility affiliate, Tidewater Utilities, Inc. I've been employed with Tidewater for 15 years and 1 week. The proposed use, as was described by Mr. Schrader, is to have a wastewater system that will collect and take the waste to the existing plant at the retreat that we own, one of six plants that we own and operate. It allows the retreat plant to utilize available capacity to maximize its efficiency. It will be done for a period of time for the first phase of the Coastal Club. The collection transmission system of the wastewater plant will be described by Mr. Polk in a little bit more detail in a second. The capacity of the treatment plant at the retreat is by permit, by DNREC permit, it is allowed to have 48,300 gallons per day of disposal, treatment and disposal. In July of 2012, the permit was amended to allow that capacity to be used for a total of 326 equivalent dwelling units or homes. That allows about 165 more units than was currently allowed in the beginning. Just to make it clear, that doesn't mean the plant will be expanded. It means that the plant has been operating efficiently, and the way in which the state allows for what is called a re-rating is to prove that the capacity of the plant can handle that kind of waste. And it's a very conservative process where they take the top 10% daily flows for a three-year period, and then they take the average of that, and that is what the capacity of the plant is allowed to be rated at. And when we did that, the plant was calculated to be able to be handling about 25,000 gallons a day, which is about half of what it is rated for. So that's why they allowed it to be re-rated for another 165 homes. The plant itself is a sequential batch reactor treatment plant. It treats to extremely high level. It meets the standards within the Inland Bays area by the state. It runs in a cycle basis so that the vessel operates instead of on a linear basis where you would see a treatment plant that a lot of you have seen where things are lined up sequentially. This is in one vessel where you have a batch and it goes into a different mode, 6-hour mode, and then another mode and another mode, all in one big vessel. So it's very efficiently run operations, all under roof, and it's been operating very successfully for about 5 to 7 years. The disposal then is not through pipes, is discharged to vessels that are located on the property where it can be stored, and then when a float kicks on, they are pumped out to drain fields that are located approximately a quarter of a mile away in the center of the community. There are 10 series of drain fields that are pumped and alternated. We only use 5 at any one time. So again, the capacity of the plant and the treatment and disposal system is at about 50% of what it could handle to this day. There are, since we've owned this system, we have never had any violations. We have in the record a document from DNREC that was dated November of 2012 that said there were no violations and the plant passed all the requirements required. The system that we have in place was allowed to be served by a CPCN that was authorized by the Public Service Commission in September of 2005. An easement was granted in the period of December of 2004 through a series of transactions with the two previous owners. It was acquired by Tidewater from Applied Water Management in December of 2005. So we've owned the plant and the system since December of 2005. The CPCN for the Coastal Club was issued by the Public Service Commission on August of 2005, and the wastewater service agreement for the Coastal Club is presently under negotiation. Terms have been generally accepted by the developer, and now we're executing the final agreement right now. The service area is one that we've already talked about. It's phase one of the Coastal Club. It will allow us to meet the service capacity for the first phase of the plant. The construction time for the service would be, as proposed in the schedule based upon the developer's build-out schedule, approximately April of 2014, the first phase of the collection system for the sewer would be installed, and that would be for about 15 homes. Those homes would be not connected yet, so they would be what is called pumped and hauled. The wastewater would be through a truck taken to another authorized wastewater plant off-site. And then sometime about July of 14, the force main to the retreat would be built through November, and that would be for about that phase would be for about 30 equivalent dwelling units, and then thereafter till about September of 16, depending on again the build out schedule, the rest of the collection system would be constructed. The rates that we're proposing for the Coastal Club would be a connection fee of approximately $8,700, one-time connection fee, with a user fee of about $1,270, compared to the connection fees at the retreat of about $7,850 and a user fee of about $914. That $914 is a tariff rate that was just reauthorized by the Public Service Commission in the TESI rate case about a year plus ago. The effect on the existing customers at the retreat is of great concern to us. I've had some discussions with some of the members of the leadership of the Homeowners Association, and in our utility and professional opinion, we are very confident that we'll have no negative effect on the existing customers. It might actually improve some of the operation of the facility in the winter months as some of the wastewater volumes decrease. And when you have a batch operation, you want to have full volume so you can have an efficiently operated system. This is a biological system, so you want to have correct temperature and volume for the bacteria and the biological activity to work, particularly in the wintertime. The drain fields and plant are, again, at half capacity now. We have no concerns about the ability to serve this on this temporary basis. And for that matter, if it had to be permanent, we could also do that. But the permit allows us to go through what we're asking for and still have some reserve capacity. I think that concludes my remarks at this time, and Mr. Schrader may want to introduce Mr. Polk.
Let me just ask you a couple quick questions to make sure that I understood what you said.
Yes, sir.
First things first, when we talk about expansion, we're talking about expanding the service area, not expanding the plant itself.
That's correct. The plant will not change at all. We still have the same number of operators go there every day as required, and they will be able to operate the existing plant the same way.
The operation of this plant and the collection and transmission system is regulated by the Department of Natural Resources.
And Environmental Control, yes.
And they are periodically inspected, and
yes.
You have no violations at
no,
this time.
No, we have no violations.
And the rates that are charged by Tidewater Environmental Services are regulated by the Public Service Commission.
That's correct.
And they are approved accordingly, correct?
Correct.
And the last thing I would ask is that my recollection is that the service agreement was originally with Applied Water Management, and how does that connect with Tidewater?
We acquired the system from Applied Water Management in December of 2005.
So you're, in fact, operating as Applied Water,
We stepped in their shoes. It was a previous utility company that preceded the regulation in the Delaware Public Service Commission. So we bought the system from Applied Water Management.
Very good. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I ask Mr. Polk to come forward to describe the route of the collection and transmission system. I'm not sure if he can be heard, Mr. Lang.
I have a mic right there.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Rich Polk, an engineer with Vista Design. The Coastal Club development is a 630-lot subdivision that was approved in 2005 for economic benefits and reasons it hasn't been developed to date. Phase one of the development is accessed off of Beaver Dam Road and includes the Loop Road as well as 153 homes of single family and townhome mixture as well as a community clubhouse. All of the wastewater from phase one as well as the entire site will flow by gravity means to a single on-site pump station. From there, it will leave the site in we're proposing a 4-inch force main staying on Coastal Club property all the way out to the right-of-way of Jimtown Road, where it will run within the right-of-way of Jimtown Road and Robbinsville Road to an existing manhole within Blair Court within the retreat community. This alignment was chosen as opposed to a more direct approach due to the presence of Gosley Mill Pond and the inability really to get easements through the Gosley Mill Pond area. The entire route, as I said, does stay on the Coastal Club property or within state right-of-ways.
Polk, just as for benefit of the commission and the people who are assembled here this evening to hear this application, the design of this particular transmission and collection system from Coastal Club to the retreat is subject to a review and approval by the county engineering department?
Absolutely. Everything is designed to the county ordinance 38 standards as well as the state standards, and both the county and the state have to review the plan and approve it.
And by the state, you mean Department of Natural Resources?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I have no further witnesses. I would ask at this time, of course, that the exhibit book be made part of the record of these proceedings. As is customary, we have submitted for you a proposed draft of findings of fact and conditions of approval so that you have a document to work from. As you all know, you are free to roam from that document and place the conditions that may lawfully be placed on any application if you should choose to favor it with an approval. This conditional use meets the purposes of the county zoning code in that it does provide a necessary service to an area where there are competing potential services, but none in existence yet. And it requires the zoning judgment of this commission and of the county council to make a determination as to whether or not this is appropriate. As you all may recall, in days gone back when there was more activity in real estate, it was frequently granted. These types of applications were frequently granted to Tidewater, Artesian, and others for service from one subdivision to another so that service could be provided to the single-family dwellings in the various subdivisions. With those thoughts in mind, I suspect that there may be one or two questions that need to be addressed by Mr. Polk, Mr. Esposito, or me, depending upon what the question is.
Well, all right then, let's find out. We'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Council. I know that you just brought up one of the questions I had, which was if this is in a county planning area, why would the county want to have a competition?
Well, I don't know that the county wants competition, but nonetheless, the Public Service Commission has granted a certificate of public convenience and necessity to Tidewater Environmental Services. The Public Service Commission has the ability to do that. It preempts any competition that the county may or may not want to address. I know all of us, and that would be Artesian, Tidewater, and the county, have bumped into each other before. I think most notably, Mr. Johnson was on Piney Neck, where they all three wanted treatment plants probably within an arm's length of each other. The economy took care of a lot of that. But for the time being, Tidewater has the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, and that's been acknowledged in the county engineer's comments when they responded to your inquiries.
And when was the CPCN granted?
05?
Which one?
For this one.
For the retreat.
9/20/05. Mr. Johnson, you asked about the Coastal Club or the retreat? The one it's going to serve or the one where the sewer plant's located?
You need to stand up.
The one it's going to serve.
The one that's going to the Coastal Club.
And the reason why I ask is because in the county comments, they referenced specifically that they wanted a CPCN issued by or before August 8th of 2013. So I'm just curious why they'd be asking for that if you already have had it for 8 years.
It's not. I don't think that comment is intended to address the retreat or the Coastal Club. The concern is whether or not that particular line will be expanded to serve other subdivisions that may be in the immediate area. Going back to our prior history on these things, when these are approved and it's alluded to in the conditions that I've provided you, we've had situations where you have a long distance between one subdivision, which has been collected, and a treatment facility somewhere else. In between, somebody may decide to develop another tract of land, put in another RPC or another subdivision, or it may have an existing one with a central system that doesn't work, or it may have septics that fail that want to get into the system. I believe, and maybe Mr. Robertson knows better than I, that the intent of the language that was sent out in Mr. Ashman's comments is if any of those events take place, the idea is to get those people into a county system, not into the Tidewater system.
I think that's true, and I think also what that speaks to is that this application was designed as a temporary fix because Tidewater can't serve the Coastal Club through Wannondale. So there would be wastewater treatment at the retreat for that limited basis or purpose of serving the Coastal Club in Phase 1. And so I think what they're saying maybe is that once Coastal Club starts pumping somewhere else, whether it's the county or whether it's Wannondale or whatever, that because this was presented as a temporary fix for the Coastal Club, that excess capacity then couldn't be used for some temporary fix for some other project. It was just limited to this situation.
Keeping in mind, we only have 165 EDUs to, we're not going to be able to reach out very far because the phase one is 163. So this application goes nowhere else other than for this particular application or phase one of Coastal Club. There are unique circumstances, and the unique circumstances are that somebody along that line has a failing septic. If DENREC and Public Service Commission direct us to connect them, then we're going to go visit with the County Engineering Department and say, you know, we understand what the condition was, you understand what you wanted, but we're in a situation where we may actually have to take on one more. Is it a problem? I don't know that we've had many of those in the last 5 years, but we have had one or two where that's happened.
That's the difference between you guys and the county. The county picks them all up, whether, you know, just as a district to get rid of the failing septic. So, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I hope that wasn't more answer than you wanted.
No, that was good. I more is better in some cases, even though sometimes it gets a little deep. and then along the same line, what impact, if any, will this temporary this handling of their waste have on the retreat?
None. It's within the capacity of the plant to handle the 165 potential EDUs that will go in there. The plant itself is not intended to be expanded, as has been testified to by these two gentlemen. It's my understanding, and I'll be glad to get one of them to confirm it, that it won't change anything. There should be no change in the way wastewater is treated there other than that there is bulk going in.
So no additional drain fields will need to be provided? No additional construction will be required?
No. In part of my testimony, I said that the drain fields are installed. Their spares already in place. They're not all being used. And, you know, without getting into too much detail about biological systems, more volume sometimes is better than not enough because the bacteria work better if they're accommodating at a volume that is consistent as well. This plant is very efficiently run. The operators are still going to visit it the same number of times. They turn the same number of valves. It's just more gallons going through it, and it's not a lot. The difference between 24,000 and 48,000 is not a big number.
Okay. And so there's not going to need to be any roads torn up, or what about connecting, you know, those pipes with the treatment plant?
Mr. Polk indicated that there is a manhole in the public highway, and it is to that manhole that this transmission collection line will connect. It won't be within, will not be within the retreat subdivision.
Okay.
There will be no change in the existing treatment process or plant or facilities. Once it gets inside that manhole, everything is underground.
And once this waste is being treated, what impact might it have on the longevity of the service of the treatment plant that you have in existence?
Again, there's a design life for every treatment plant. It's designed for 48,000 gallons a day, and it's been operating at less than 25,000 gallons a day for 7 years. These are designed to be in operation for 20 to 30 years.
Yep. And if my, can't give a lot of credit to my memory, but it seems to me with the Coastal Club, there was some discussion about providing some, sewer treatment services to residents on Jimtown Road. Is that correct, or is my memory?
Still correct. There's an approval condition. There are, I believe there's 30 equivalent dwelling units, lots along Jimtown Road. That is an approval condition of the Coastal Club.
Correct.
And that will not be altered as part of this. They have to be served, I believe it's within 3 years of the first hookup, and that'll be a future phase, and those will not be part of the services that are provided through the retreat.
Would not be.
Would not be.
So it would be 3 years from the hookup of phase one, or 3 years from where, from when?
It's 3 years from the first connection of the first house.
So if they had to be serviced within 3 years of that first connection, you're saying that that's, how long is it, are you anticipating the build out of Coastal Club?
Full build out of Coastal Club or just
phase one?
It depends on market conditions. I'm not sure what exactly.
I would expect.
So I guess
I would think that the developer would love to sell 156 units almost immediately.
I'm sure.
Not sure that the market would allow for that. And I also would like to point out, there was a significant controversy about the Jimtown service area, and that, I know your memory is probably like mine. It's about running at half speed on that particular issue, but my recollection is that after all the trouble was about Jimtown being included in the system, the Jimtown people lost interest and didn't want to be, even though the condition remains in effect. So technically they could apply to connect to it. I don't recall that anybody ever asked or would had expressed an opinion that they wanted to do that.
But if any of them do want to, would they be part of this connection or not?
I'm not sure from an engineering point of view. Mr. Polk would have to answer that.
They could be. There'd have to be some additional engineering performed to bring them back on. But if they wanted to, they would still be served by the same pump station, and it would still use the same force main. The force main's been designed to accommodate all 630 homes, the clubhouse, as well as those 30 lots. So it's designed to accommodate everything in an ultimate condition. It's just, for the purpose of this, it was just phase one that was intended to go to it.
So, would those be part of those other connections that you were talking about, possibility of being included?
It is possible, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have no further questions at this point.
Okay, Mr. Burton.
I'm a little unclear on the 30. Are we taking 30 off of the 153?
No, we're staying at 153 plus 7 for a total of, 165. The 30 we're going to have to deal with if and when they ask to be connected. I'm not sure what the answer is going to be. If those 30 come in first, then we'll have to deal with it. But they have to pay the connection and charges and all that are associated with that after the completion of construction. So the answer is yes, we would have to accommodate them as to when and how that would affect the 163 is unpredictable at this point because we just don't know.
Mr. Esposito mentioned that he went to the existing plant and got it expanded correctly to add the 100 and made it run more efficiently to get more units out of it.
Can I try to clarify? The plant was running under capacity for 4 to 5 years. And we have done this with other plants. We did it with this one. We saw that it was only operating at about 20 to 25,000 gallons a day average. So it's a fairly routine process to go in and do what's called a re-rating of the plant. Nothing in the plant changed. No bells or whistles, no new chemicals. It was just under capacity. So we wanted it rated at its proper capacity so we could determine whether we could add other customers in the future. That's what we did. So the permit volume has always been at 48,300 gallons per day. That hasn't changed. In the permit, if you look at it, it says how many equivalent dwelling units that now relates to. Before it was about 170. Now it says 340 or something like that.
Can that be done again?
It could. It's unlikely. We're pretty much going to max out at about where it is now. And one reason is that the standards in the inland bays for discharge are not going to get any less stringent. They're probably going to get more stringent.
Could that plant be expanded anymore?
It could, except that we have a limit in the land that's available to us. So it is unlikely, because the limiting factor is probably the drain field, because we have a nice drain field with plenty of buffer. You don't want to push the limits of a drain field. You could push the limits of a treatment plant because you can design and compress and build up, but a drain field is a drain field, and if you're out of land, you're out of land, and that subdivision is pretty much built out. So it is not a system that we're looking at expanding beyond this phase.
Thank you. No further questions.
All right. Mr. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Polk, just an estimate, if you would be so kind, from the manhole on Robinsonville Road, the distance northeasterly up to the junction with Jimtown Road, is that approximately 2,000 feet?
Approximately, yes.
And then northwesterly along Jimtown Road to the entrance onto the Coastal Club, another 2,000 feet?
Approximately.
So
that's probably about 3,000 and 2,500 feet. The total distance is 9,800 feet from the pump station up around down Jimtown and down Robbinsville.
Okay. So off premises then would be roughly a mile, would it not?
Roughly a mile or a little bit more.
Thank you. And does anyone have an idea of when the anticipated start of Coastal Club will be? When their site work and things will go forward?
We don't.
No. It's not, I know it's not subject to this, but
The plan approvals are waiting at this point, and I mean, it could start this fall or it could start next spring, to be the earliest.
Thank you, gentlemen. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ross?
Yeah, just for clarity, Dennis, the CPCN was granted in the exhibit book to the Marine Farm project, but the Marine Farm project and Coastal Club are the same, right? Just so that the record reflects that. And then you talked about the capacity at the retreat, and is Jerry, is that capacity at the peak capacity at the retreat, that's the 25,000 gallons a day or whatever, that's at peak, or is that average? Or what?
All right, let me explain that again. It's peak. The way DNREC operates it, and I actually have the records, I won't go through them now, but you take 3 years and the top 10% of the daily flows for those 3 years, average them. That's how you get the number of 25,000 or whatever the number is. And that's what the permit then is dictated by.
Right, and you're assuming those same numbers for the Coastal Club or similar numbers close to it?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's kind of a coincidence that it happens to be about the same as the capacity of the plant. It worked out that way. So we were going to re-rate the plant anyway. The Coastal Club's first phase happened to be the amount that was just less than the extra capacity that the DNREC allowed us to re-rate it for.
I'm just curious, how does that compare to our EDUs at the county level as far as the number of gallons per EDU?
You're higher as well than your allowed or dictated EDU gallonage is higher than the actual practice. It's standard throughout the industry.
You always over-engineer. By a lot, I won't say double
that.
Like you, or
it's not us, it's DNREC who requires it.
But is it similarly double the
it depends on the plant. The smaller plants are more likely to be overrated because, you know, it's economy of scale type thing. When you have a big plant like some of the county plants, there's a lot of volume in the, you know, 1 foot of freeboard on a lagoon means millions of gallons.
The phase one pipe that would go to the retreat eventually, when you got that pipe laid, how does that complement, or does it conflict with the Gosley proposed path of the Gosley Sewer District pipes?
I don't know that the path of Gosley has been defined at this point, but the pipe itself will be constructed to the county standards that are established by the county engineering department. If at some point in time that pipe is taken over by the county, the theory is that from an engineering point of view, it is compatible with the requirements of the engineering department. There was a time in history when that was not the case, and as history has evolved with wastewater treatment in this county, the county engineering department has become more insistent that the construction be compatible with that. There were, during my time as the engineer's attorney, two or three subdivisions that were notable for having inappropriate or ineffective systems built. I believe that most of those were cured by the time Mr. Robertson came on board, but there may have been one or two more. Woods on Herring Creek. I forgot about that one. Woods on Herring Creek is a notable example. But now uniformity is required throughout the county for the construction.
If the county was to take over that pipe, I mean, how does that work? Does the county have to purchase the pipe, or they just assume management of the pipe? How does that work?
It depends upon when, where, and how they do that, but there are any number of factors that get involved. However, as a general principle, without getting into the specifics of any of it, if the county takes over a private system, it does have an obligation of compensation to the owner of the private system it takes under Title IX, Chapter 65, I think it is, and also under Ordinance 38. It may or may not take the form of cash. It may be in the form of credits. The value of it depends upon when, where, how, what its depreciation is at that time. Again, drawing upon my own personal experiences, we took over the Rehoboth Mall system. And the Rehoboth Mall system at that time was failing and had no value, including its collection or its treatment facility. In this case, I don't know what the county's immediate schedule is for Gosling Creek, but let's say that 2 years from now they were to do that, then obviously the functional depreciation of the line would be different than it would be if it were 10 years from now or some other point.
What happens to the subsequent phases? Are they assuming that you got granted the CU, you have your line to the retreat for phase one, and then the other phases get built out? Are they on a separate system? Where does that go?
You take that one.
The plan would be that if the build out occurs the way we hope it will, that we would then abandon the connection and continue on to a plant further down called Wandendale.
Or the county plant.
Or the county plant, but right now that's our plan, certainly.
But I'm confused in the, you're going to be collecting the connection fees and service fees for phase one. You're not going to be able to collect them a second time to run the route to a second plant, regardless of what the plant is, Wandendale or the county, doesn't matter. So how do you pay for the subsequent phases charge twice for the same hookup, right?
You're talking about the phase one consumers, correct?
Yeah, and then the subsequent ones, and then how it impacts the total system cost to whoever it is, whether it's a district or Wandendale.
Phase two and subsequent phases I don't think are an issue, because if it were to be starting with the county, if it was the county system, then it would be a county rate established for connection, transmission, what have you, the normal process, but they would not necessarily, we'd have to look and see where.
That's not what you asked.
No, you're charging the connection fee to phase one people, right?
Right.
And then
right.
When phase two or three, you can't do anything for them because you're maxed out at the retreat. So it's got to go somewhere else, whether it's Wandendale or the county, doesn't matter, right? But now you have to run new piping. You can't recharge the connection fee to the phase one people, even though you're rerouting them, you know, that whole project to another system.
Okay.
And then the responsibility falls on those other people to pull them in. So instead of gaining value by having more people pay their share, you're actually gaining a cost, because they're already on a separate system and you're having to do twice the work.
I understand the question. If this was our system, presuming that we would disconnect and then go to Wandendale, all the customers would go to Wandendale. The connection fees and the user's fees contemplate that, and the developer has agreed in principle to pay for that, assuming that all 630 go to Wandendale. So we've calculated the connection fees and user fees as if all 630 go to Wandendale. And it's been spread out over all 630.
And what if they go to a county system. Is that the same?
No.
And again, that gets us into where I was trying to answer a question that may have been the wrong answer to the first question, and that is that at the time of such an event, then the county has got to determine what the rating is, what the rates, tariffs will be, but that also has to decide what credits it would give to the prior owners for the acquisition of that.
Well, the problem I'm struggling with is, you know, you want to have a conditional use to do part of coastal, right? But you don't want the responsibility of doing all of coastal. It may fall on the county if Wannondale isn't financially feasible, or if you decide not to build it.
Can I address that?
Yeah.
If Coastal Club is successful, by definition, we'll build Wannondale. Our contract with the developer is for all of Coastal Club, not just the first phase of Coastal Club.
But, okay. Then stay with me here. Wannondale is 600 and some units.
Coastal Club
is 600 and some units. Thank you. And 165. So obviously phase two is not going to get you to 600. So when phase two comes in, is that enough to build Wannondale?
Well, we have a schedule that we're getting into the contract that is yet to be executed, but it's been drafted that is based upon a build-out schedule. That build-out schedule is X number of EDUs at X certain time. That time contemplates the design, permitting, and construction of the force main and the first part of the Wannondale plant. So when you get to a certain number of homes, say 100 to 125, before you run out of capacity, you start building, you start permitting, and then building the force main in the plant so that when 157th home is available, the force main's ready, the plant is ready. That's the way it works.
But before phase one is complete, Wannondale will be under construction and ready when phase two starts.
At a certain point, when it appears that the Coastal Club will go to the next phase, there's going to be a decision made that even if they don't sell that 157th home, we're going to start building Wannondale. Yes.
Can I ask your follow-up question to him?
Sure.
Is this the only subdivision that's going to be treated at Wannondale?
No.
There will be other
yes.
projects
proposed. I mean, if
yes.
they're built.
Yeah.
I'm just concerned that the county gets in a situation where there's not enough for some reason. Wannondale doesn't happen. You're saying it will happen.
Yes.
And then the people in the Gosley district or the county get stuck with the bill, and that's what I'm trying to make sure it doesn't
Understand.
Happen.
Again, I can explain what the contract says. You have it's the way it's drafted is that we can make the decision after 156 to stop the project. The only reason you'd stop the project is if the houses aren't selling. If the houses are selling, we're going to build the Wannondale plant.
Understanding that those connection and tariffs are going to be regulated by the Public Service Commission also.
And we have an obligation because it's our CPCN to serve them.
Who holds the trump card at that? I mean, does the county hold the trump card in the CPCN, or does the Public Service Commission?
I think the Public Service Commission does. It's the licensing agency.
Mm-hmm. Think about that.
I think the owner does, because if they can't serve, the owner can petition the Public Service Commission right. to revoke the CPCN. I mean,
but
that's kind of the problem you're in now, is that you can't serve through Wannondale, so it's...
But we can,
a little
but
bit
we
stuck.
Can serve through the retreat.
But... I guess that's a question the Public Service Commission have to ask, because it's 600 and some odd units, and you can't serve those right now.
Well,
I can't understand the Public Service Commission's decision when they made it, because there wasn't a proposed Gosley Sewer District. I don't know what they would say today, considering that there is a Gosley Sewer District. Whether they would still do that or not would be maybe a different question. And, you know, but that's not the discussion we have before us tonight, I don't believe.
Well, philosophically, Mr. Ross, I guess an even more interesting issue is that we've all been doing this for the last 10 years or so. We've had a number of wastewater treatment plants come and go through this body and this council and whatnot. And
the economy is going up and down and God knows what all, but the county hasn't built a plant out there and we haven't either. Hopefully the economy will change and that will remedy itself.
Well, you have to take into consideration the people that are building in phase one as well. I mean, those people are building into a 600-plus unit subdivision and anticipating that build-out for their HOA fees and everything that goes with it. Correct. And so it impacts more than Tidewater and Coastal and the owners. It impacts the future home buyers as well, and making sure that they don't get overcharged or double-charged or that they actually have a system to hook to so it gets built out is important.
Well, your point's well made, and I think Mr. Esposito has demonstrated that they are sensitive to that. We just can't predict at this moment in time what that will actually look like.
Yeah, the difference here, let me try to simplify it a little bit. If we didn't have the retreat coincidentally right next door, we would build the Force Main and build Wannadale now.
Well, I mean, just so you know that I'm only 59. My grandmother lived to be 97. My grandfather, 92. So I'll try to remember the conversation. No further chairs, no questions.
Okay, then.
Mr. Lang.
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Abbott.
No questions.
Counsel.
Yeah, I've got some. I want to follow up with that. Why don't you just build Wannadale now, then? Because it seems like...
You have to ask Mr.
Because to follow, and that goes into one of Mr. Ross's questions about... I understand that you can't rebill the people in phase one for the connections for phases two and three on, but it sounds like what you've done is taken the cost of doing this temporary connection and also Wannadale and amortized all that together for everybody, whereas if you just built it all the way to Wannadale, it'd probably be cheaper, and you just said you could do that anyway if you didn't have the retreat.
Well, it may or may not be cheaper. We've calculated it different ways, and there is an economy of scale that starting small and going on, but the short answer is we sign an agreement with a developer. The developer is starting a phase of a project. It's a big project, and like everyone, the economy's turning around, but they're not certain how things will be a year and a half from now. This gives them the opportunity to pause and make a decision. I'm not speaking for them, but I have spoken to them quite a bit, and I think...
Do you have an agreement, though? Because you've said you don't have one signed. And you just
we don't have it signed. They've agreed.
You just said you had one signed, so I want to make sure we're clear on what we're dealing
with. No, if I said that, I misspoke. Okay. We have agreed in principle to the terms. We don't have a signed, executed agreement yet.
I'm going to jump around a little bit just because a bunch of different stuff was said. There was talk about County Engineering's comments with regard to picking up additional subdivisions or EDUs, I guess, once Coastal Club goes somewhere else. And I think you both just basically said that the intent of the retreat is just to serve the Coastal Club. To make that a lot simpler, once the Coastal Club connects somewhere else, is there any issue with just voiding out the conditional use at that point? I mean, if we're saying that it all doesn't serve the retreat, why does it have to have a life beyond the Coastal
Club? I don't disagree with that, Mr. Robertson. I just don't know how to put a time frame on that.
And maybe there doesn't need to be one. It's just when there's no longer a need to serve the Coastal Club, the conditional use for the retreat becomes void. Because I suspect we're going to hear from people at the retreat are going to say that, that was their understanding. It was just supposed to serve the Coastal Club. So once that need goes away, the conditional use goes away.
Well, the proposed conditions that I gave with the exhibit book indicate that at some point in time, this extension of the line or expansion of the service area would terminate upon availability of either a public or a private wastewater system. I don't know who's going to get there first. I suspect Mr. Esposito would love to be on the ground first and take it over. I suspect the County Engineering Department would similarly like to do that.
And I don't know that matters. My point is just it seems like are we overcomplicating it with the conditional use and just say once the Coastal Club, wherever it goes, who cares, but once it leaves the retreat,
then the conditional use would expire. Right. And I think that was...
I think that's what everybody was kind of beating around, but...
I've sort of tried to articulate that in the conditions, but I'm not sure that it was satisfactory.
The next question is for Mr. Polk. We talked about the connection from the Coastal Club to the retreat, the way that line runs. How does that compare to the line to Wannadale? Or where's the Wannadale line go?
Actually, the line to Wannadale, the way it's been designed it, it'll just continue down on Robbinsville Road,
okay,
down to and cross over Route 24. So really, the alignment through the Coastal Club, down Jimtown, and down Robbinsville is a shared alignment. The pipe has been designed for all of that. It's a simple unplugging and continue the pipe.
How much further is the line from Retreat to Wannondale, roughly?
2.5 miles.
Has that all been designed, the line? I mean, is it all, like you said, that one's been engineered and designed in sufficient capacity. What about from that point to Wannondale?
It's been designed in my office. It hasn't seen the light of day and been reviewed by anybody.
Okay. Who's it got to be reviewed by? Denrec and, I mean, the county, but...
Obviously the county as well as Denrec as well.
What's the status of Wannondale, the actual plant and the disposal areas?
Well, the short answer is we're waiting for the customers, and the Coastal Club is one of the first customers. We have other agreements that are waiting to start. Everybody wants to not be the first one to go. We have all the approvals that we need, subject to the final, you know, site plan that the DNREC requires when you actually start construction. And it's ready for customers.
Okay, so it's all been engineered and designed? And
not engineered. It's at what I would call 70% engineering. All that the permit and regulatory requirements require to get to a point where we can say you can sign a contract because it's a real project. Well, now we have to build it.
Because I guess here's my concern about this, and it's a county issue and a planning and zoning issue that the county has dealt with a little bit in a lot of different situations with wastewater treatment plants and developments that need to connect. And I guess I'm really concerned that this commission and the county is going to be dealing with an issue down the road. We're just putting off an issue till down the road, because what I'm concerned about is that if this conditional use got approved with 160 EDUs, and then we have a developer that's relying on that and moving forward, and he sold lots and he's got, or she's got momentum going and is ready for phase two site plan and to start selling properties, and we've got residents in there, like I think Mr. Ross said, who are expecting a completed development with amenities and everything else, and then they've got phase one and, you know, a war zone for the rest of it that's torn up with site work and no completed houses. And just from the calculations that are in your book, it looks like you're planning on 4 months to build a designed force main from Coastal Club to the Retreat, and it's going to be at least another 8 months, assuming that it's designed, just to build the force main, plus however long to do Wannondale. And so we're going to be dealing with it, the county, in 150 EDUs, phase two, where there's no sewer, the developer wants to keep going, but there's no ability to connect to Wannondale. I mean, answer how that's going to all work, and it's not going to be an issue in a year and a half.
Okay, I try to address that when Mr. Ross asked his questions. The way this agreement, which isn't yet signed, but the way it's drafted and the way it's based upon the developer's schedule, there will be a trigger point of X number of EDUs that will be consistent with a construction design permitting and construction schedule that gets to a point, not at 156, but at somewhere less than 100, that says, now you're committed, developer, to build Wannondale. We need you to post security to build Wannondale, and the force main to Wannondale, and the pump station to Wannondale, and Wannondale, for about 5 times the cost of what it costs to do this so far. So it won't be at 156. It'll be when the construction schedule is done, Wannondale will be ready to operate, so that there is no lag in between. I'm apparently confusing you.
No, I think I'm getting it, but I just want to say it to you another way. Then maybe it'll help. It appears that what we're doing is essentially priming a pump, because you can't sell units without sewer, okay? And you can't sell the units and then build the plant, right? You already have a plant over here that can serve a given number of units. Now, this line that's going to be connecting, Rich, that's not going to be wasted, duplicated, or anything else. It's part of the overall system for both Zwanendale and for this temporary situation. Is that a fair statement?
That is correct.
Okay. So this is being put in place so that those gentlemen in the back can start doing some things and start selling some homes, creating some jobs, doing some building. And what you're saying is, based on the pace at which that takes place in that first section, when you get to 50 or 100, then you're going to be committed. So the object of the game, it appears to me, is that at the point that you need Zwanendale, it'll be done.
That's correct.
But it's not going to be done before then.
No.
And that's the reason for this little temporary situation
yes,
here.
Sir. Is that right.
Is that what you're saying? Does that make sense to you?
That makes sense, but I'm not sure that the timing matches up. To build that design and build that 2 miles of force main, and that's what just the question I have.
It's 15 months.
15 months.
That's it.
But that's the time period, basically, you've got for the first build out of phase one in your tab 8 of the book.
That's for the collection system. That's not for a force main. It has nothing to do with Wanadale in our book. We're not going to be looking, we're not going to hide as if we don't know what's going on in the development. If the development is building at the pace that we expect, in about 1 year, we're going to start that 15-month cycle of building the force main and Wanadale. So in about 2 years, give or take, Wanadale will be ready for its first customer. If it slows down, that 15 months gets delayed.
And then you cut off the retreat at that point,
mm-hmm.
and it goes?
That's correct. And because of the design, the layout of the force main, we're not building an extra pipe. It goes right by the property.
I don't suppose it's any different with the county, is it?
Well, no, but the county doesn't do this temporary fix. So if we connected this to the county, it would be 600 units that would be available of capacity. And there wouldn't be a delay between phases. I still go back to the, you know, it looks like the completed rate of 163 units of connections to the retreat is, you know, in 2016, you know, starting in April 2014. And just given the dates that you just described, it almost sounds like there's a year lag time between the completion of the 163 connections and when you could start phase two. I mean, it almost suggests, back to what I said before, is why aren't you just building Wanadale from day one? And I get what Mr. Wheatley's saying is priming the pump, but at the same time, you know, the pump's going to start sputtering there after phase one is I guess, my concern. You know, and then the county's going to have to be dealing with somebody who wants to get a site plan approved for phase two and a notice to proceed, and then everybody's just banging heads again because Wanadale may not be ready to go. The county is. Why do you know? Just fighting through all that when we ought to just be dealing with that right up front with there being a method of connection for the whole thing and not placing the property owners in Coastal Club in jeopardy of having, you know, the place go on hold for a given period of time or the developer lose momentum in building if they can't connect to Wanadale during some lag period.
I don't know if I'm saying it, but I'll say it again. The developers are signing this contract. They dictate our construction schedule. By definition, if the contract is validly written and executed properly, by definition, there will not be a lag. They can't let it happen or the contract doesn't work.
Question. I have a question for you, and I have a question for you first. The time frame, the time involved, the construction time, from the time you start building this temporary line until it's functional is how long?
4 months.
Okay, so 4 months you're in business, right? 4 months you can serve lots in the you can begin to serve part of that 165, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Four months, and we were talking about 15 months to do the first part of the Swanendale thing.
Yeah.
Okay. That 4 months has got to happen right there before any of this other stuff, before that other clock can start.
Right.
Okay? So it seems to me that it might make some sense. The question I have for you is a legal question. Is it within the our power to place a condition requires this contract to be in place, signed, and reviewed by us before this conditional use becomes valid?
I don't.
If you're worried about it not happening, I'm trying to think of what else we could do that would give some assurance that.
Well, I don't think we can review a contract between private entities. First of all, I don't think we can do that. It's not my concern personally. It's a concern that, again, we've got an issue now where a developer wants to roll and the developer can't.
Right.
And it strikes me that all that the county should at least be aware of is that, are we just pushing that issue down the road to the 164th EDU? And maybe that's on them, but the problem is it's going to potentially come back on the county when they're asking for the site plan approval for phase two and a notice to proceed with phase two. So, I mean, just so that's out there for everybody to consider, if there's relief that's sought at that point, just remember, what was said here tonight.
Exactly. As long as it's under your hat, mm-hmm. Wannendale, Weather mm-hmm. Retreat, and there's no gap, then technically there's probably not an issue. But if Wannendale doesn't come online and phase two does, and then it falls on the county, then my grandmother and grandfather are going to come and visit you, Mr. Rutherford.
Well, here's my question.
I hear you.
Would be how, and I agree with what you're saying, and I think the point's well taken, that this is a risk that these folks are taking. Not the county. It's not, this is,
Yeah, but that's not, because the problem that we've had is the county. And this is, we've seen it before, and not just Tidewater or anything like that, but with, I can think of final site plans where developers have asked the county, Planning and Zoning Commission, to approve final site plans. One of the criteria is that you have the ability to connect to a county sewer system. And we've been asked to kind of create an exception that says, okay, well, here's the final site plan approval so that developer, you can get your financing or whatever. Knowing that they can't yet connect to a wastewater treatment plant, and it just steamrolls. We keep doing exceptions, and I don't want there to be. I want the Planning and Zoning Commission particularly to be aware that what Mr. Esposito stated tonight, don't come back looking for exceptions starting with phase two, and so if the developer's here and he's concerned about, the phasing of this or the contracts of this, make sure that that's dealt with in the contract so that they're not coming back with the start of phase two asking for relief from the county. Because again, I there's an issue now because Tidewater cannot serve the Coastal Club through Wannendale like it planned. So we're being asked to adjust that now.
Right.
I don't want the county to be put in a position of having to adjust something on the 164th EDU. That's all.
Well, that's a point well taken. I'm not exactly sure how we would ensure ourselves that would happen. I would think we could have some kind of language in the site plan approval process, though. When you say we approve a plan, maybe we shouldn't be approving a plan if there's no visible means of to serve it. Maybe that second phase doesn't get approved until
they won't get a notice to proceed. I know that from county.
Well, that's what I mean. So I mean that's going to be their issue. I mean that's a problem that would be created by them and would need to be solved by them. And I think that's what we're all thinking of. And I think we're all in agreement with that. That the county cannot be expected to come in and rescue every developer, every plan that doesn't work out the way that it was intended to. And I think everyone would agree with that. That's just an inappropriate expectation, and that the county shouldn't do that. I think when we have a situation here, now that I've seen the whole thing, because I came in with a great deal of concern about how this was going to be done, but it makes a lot more sense now seeing the whole thing. The issue is going to be dealing with the potential for things not working out the way that they should, and I think we have to decide up front how we're going to do that, how it's going to be done. And I think that it whatever it is, it has to not be the county's problem.
Esposito said he's going to write the check. He's going to make Wannadale happen.
And that's why I said I'd like to have that contract be made a part of the conditional use and an exhibit and all that good stuff, but apparently we can't do that.
Well, so. I don't know that it couldn't be contingent, Mr. Wheatley, on the contract being executed. I mean, if this whole thing is...
Well, I think it should be then. If we have the ability to do that, then we shouldn't allow it to proceed until there's an executed contract in place. And I would think that the parties would understand that.
I'm like, they don't want to do it either.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's exactly right. So...
I can assure you our intent is to sign this contract as soon as possible.
Okay. I'm not sure where this leaves us, but I'm done. Who's next? I think that's it. All right. Did anyone else have a question before we open up for public? Mr. Schrader, did you want to make any kind of statement?
No, I think we've covered this.
Okay. You look like you had something to say. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take a seat nearby. We'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of conditional use number 1967, Tidewater Environmental Services Incorporated? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Chase Brockstead. My law firm, Bear Mandalas Brockstead, represents the owner of the Coastal Club, and we are here tonight in support of this application. I think that you've addressed already a lot of the comments, frankly, that I had intended to make. I can tell you this, that we believe that this to be in the best interest of the Coastal Club. We have a contract with a developer. It's our understanding that the contract that we have also contemplates a contract with Tidewater. We have a developer who is anxious to proceed. We have builders who are anxious to build. And if this contract is not ratified, I guess, and there's a settlement, then this is going to cause some serious consequences for my client. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to take them. But we are hopeful that this goes through. The priming the pump comment is the exact one, which we think is the right one. As you saw, this pipe is going to need to be built in this location anyway, on its way to Wannadale. At least we hope that the contract goes through and that Wannadale is built. Now, I'm happy to take any questions.
I have a question. Tab 4, there's an easement signed 9 years ago, August, by a Peter O. Brockstead. Is that?
He happens to be my dad, yes.
All right. But thank you, sir. That's
sure.
All.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you. Okay. Yes, sir.
My name's Preston Shaw. I represent the contract purchaser of the Coastal Club property. I just wanted to answer a couple of questions that we are probably, Blake Thompson and I, who are sitting in the back, are probably better in a better position to answer than Mr. Esposito and Mr. Schrader. Timing. We anticipated that exact issue and we kind of tried to take the onus off of Tidewater and, I guess, off of the county if there was a problem on phase two. So the way I believe, now I haven't seen this component of the, I've seen all the details of the agreement, but the meat of the timing, I'm still waiting to see. The way it's supposed to be written is that Tidewater tells us the time period that it's going to take to get Wannadale built, designed, engineered, and built, and we give the green light on when they want it to start. And the way we give the green light is we post a $4 million letter of credit with them. So they have all the money they need to build the phase one of Wannadale, or I guess all the money they need, and if we default on something, a letter of credit they can pull upon to ensure that we honor the obligations within the contract to build the force main, build the pump station, and get all the way to Wannadale. So if we pull that, if trigger too late, it's on us. We have to stop selling at the 156th unit. So the idea being that I won't be sitting there pointing fingers either at Tidewater or the county or someone else. It'll be entirely on us regarding that timing. The other question, I believe, Mr. Brox has answered it on behalf of the land seller, but we have builders lined up, Shell Brothers, Envy Homes, and Beezer Homes, that wanted to start building models this summer. And then we realized there was Well, we always knew there was a sewer issue. We didn't know the extent to which there was a sewer issue. So they're ready to start as soon as possible. The other thing is that I would address to Mr. Ross, which I thought that was a really good question, is in the event that, for whatever reason, the county ends up, maybe it's a negotiation between the county and Tidewater and us, but let's just say for, let's not talk about how we get there, but let's just say that the county ends up being the ultimate sewer provider of the Coastal Club. What happens to the phase one homeowners? How do they pay their impact fee? Because obviously they don't want to pay a double impact fee. If they've already, if essentially one's already been paid, and the way our builder agreements are structured is the builder actually pays the impact fees. But the people that settled on a home a year and a half ago, if we switch to the county, aren't going to want to get hit by, a $5,000 impact fee by the county. What we've negotiated with, we've anticipated that, and what we've talked to Tidewater about is a situation in which whatever the credit that's associated to Tidewater with the turnover of the force main that they have in place. And in a conversation I had with Mr. Izzo 3 months ago, and I can't speak for him, but the alignment of the hookup to the Coastal Club was similar to the alignment that was being proposed for the Gosley Creek Sewer District. So that line will be utilized. It won't be abandoned. And so there'll be a credit likely associated with the turning over of that line to the county. And any difference, we will pay as the developer. So we will not go back to our homeowners and hit them up for an additional impact fee. We've got that anticipated in the county sewer pro forma. We've got a number in there associated with having to cover any additional impact fees associated with the units in phase one that were hooked up to the retreat, assuming this conditional use is approved, and then now will be hooked up to the county. That's it. Any questions?
So the only the piece that's hanging fire between you and Tidewater is simply the schedule, the time. You said.
Well, they give us all the details of the impact fees and the timing of that. But I was always under the impression that we simply told them to go at a certain time period based upon our understanding of the 15-month time period that they provided to us. Mm-hmm. So if we're late, if we pull that trigger late, it falls on us rather than them.
Right.
And Jerry intimated that it was actually a certain number of units we were going to hit. So I don't know if it's that or if we actually give the green light ourselves. Do you know?
Come on up here, Mr. Esposito. Maybe we can solve this problem right now.
Sure.
We've got two lawyers here. They can go in the back, reduce it to writing, get a contract signed right here. Go ahead.
Ask the question again. I'm sorry. I want to make sure I'm answering the right question.
I wasn't asking a question.
All right. Ask.
So the question is... Is it a certain unit that we trigger when we hook up, like the 80th unit? Is that what triggers the design of the Wannondale plant, or is it when we give you the green light, or is it the earlier of one or the other?
It's the earlier, and the calendar schedule is based upon your EDU count. So if you prefer to have it as a calendar instead of an EDU count, we can do it that way too.
So it sounds like what it's going to be is there'll be a certain trigger point where Tidewater says we don't care if you haven't told us. Right. Based upon your absorption and hitting this number of EDUs, we're going to start designing the system now, or we can pull the trigger earlier if for some reason we feel like we're going to absorb more quickly.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Is it 15 months in construction or design and construction?
Everything.
Everything. So that's from the 70% you're at now through?
Soup to nuts. And although I told Preston I can't put it in the contract, it's actually less than that. But we're going to, we don't want to be because of, you know, rain and weather and other things, it's probably going to be less than 15 months. But that's from permitting, design, and construction of the force main and the 75,000-gallon Wannondale plant, 15 months.
I mean, because it seems like I know that they're the owner, but if you're the developer, I mean, you're the one that has the most risk, though. That's what we were sort of talking about. As you lose momentum, I mean, are you comfortable with what's been said?
Yes. I mean, the most risk to me is if this isn't approved and there's not an agreement as to how this property is going to be served by sewer and it stays stalled for another year and a half.
No, I get that.
That's the greatest risk.
It just seems like at some point, talking about timing, trigger or not, you almost say, because if you've got Beazer and Envy and whoever else coming in there and building and it's pretty aggressive, you give them the green light the time you start building the first house just so that you know. I mean, I know there's financial issues.
There's a lag time, though. Even, like, let's just say for this was approved, say, in September. And we settle on the property in late September and put a shovel in the ground in early October. We don't have model homes built and open until late spring, early summer 2014. And we're not actually settling homes with home buyers until late, like around this time or probably even later next year. So there's a little bit of kind of time to see how the market reacts in the early stages, where if we come out of the blocks like the Senator's project in Lewis, we're going to be calling Jerry shortly after release of the project saying, start Wannadale now. But if we come out and it's slow and it's a slow release, we'll probably stick to more moderate pace.
If you had your druthers, would it be county or Tidewater? All things being equal.
No offense, Jerry, but county. I want the lowest cost provider of sewer that has the least risk of raising rates on my home buyers in the long run. And I think due to the financing mechanisms the county is able to utilize, due to the size of the systems it's able to build, that is the county. Unfortunately, I have a property under contract where a CPCN was signed in 2005 with a private wastewater utility, and I have to honor that, and the law and the Public Service Commission says I have to honor that. So I am where I am, and Jerry and I are best buds now.
Unless, of course, Mr. Esposito voluntarily surrenders.
What'd you say?
Unless, of course, Mr. Esposito voluntarily surrenders the CPCN.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with that.
That's precisely what I was going to say to you. All right, sir, we thank you. Anyone else like to speak in favor? Okay, is there anyone that would like to speak in opposition to conditional use number 1967? Yes, sir.
My name is Bill Baydowler. I am the vice president of the Homeowners Association at the retreat at Love Creek. I will state very explicitly, I am not speaking in opposition at this point in time.
Okay.
But I do have some questions to be raised. Mr. Schell and Mr. Esposito did speak to our board of directors. I was not on the board at that time. I am currently on the board. And based upon the information that has come forward today, I do have some questions I would like to ask. Specifically, the first question resides around the capacity. We've heard approximately 50%. We've heard Mr. Esposito state that the evaluation of the current usage is based upon the last 3 years, the 10% highest volume day. Okay, and that translates to 50%. As Mr. Schell knows, the retreat of Home Creek has been built out significantly over the last couple of years. In January of 2012, there were 100 homes. In April of 2013, there were 140. 40% growth in the matter of 15, 16 months. So I've got to ask Mr. Esposito, through you, when you look at the capacity of 50%, how confident do you feel that you have the right statistics? Because as you look towards the growth and you say, we've got potentially another 20 homes in the retreat that could be built in the next year or so, you've got 160 units sitting at Coastal, or 156, and you have these infamous 30 that may or may not elect to join, I think that becomes a question of capacity. Okay?
Yep. Any other questions?
Yes. The second question I have, okay, and I do think, I do want to comment on the general comments here about the condition being only Coastal, and then obviously once Coastal goes, then there should not be somebody else to be able to come in.
Yeah.
I think we would probably tend to agree with that. That would require a separate conditional application. But there's a lot of discussion here about the county being the owner, you know, basically having to step to the plate in the future, et cetera. Well, if this development stops at 150, the retreat at Love Creek, basically, their disposal units that are in their property becomes the owner of these 150 units that come on board. And so I think we have to question, therefore, what's the lifespan, too, of that going on now. So I think there's a couple of questions here that's the retreat of Love Creek homeowners could also be the owners of a problem in the future. There is one other question that goes down to the original agreement that existed between the original developer and the predecessor to Tidewater.
Right.
And that is a question of what I would call potential liability. If something happens to the treatment plant, or the disposal units for that matter, where somebody puts some stuff into the system that can affect that system and create the system to fail or require significant maintenance, etc. The agreement, as we understand it, has that the user, okay, and at that point in time, the only user was the retreat of Home Creek, Love Creek, would be liable and could be kicked out of the system. So I have to ask Mr. Esposito, as Coastal comes on and there's a new user in there, what is that agreement going to specify, and how does that modify the previous agreement where the retreat of Home Creek, Love Creek, is essentially the liability?
Okay. Okay. That it?
That's it.
All right. If you'll take a seat on Mr. Esposito, I'm going to invite you up. You, if you would, please respond to the gentleman's concerns.
Okay. I think I wrote down, there's three questions if I
I got capacity, liability, and what happens with adding the new user.
Sure. The capacity, I'll try maybe a little bit more detail again. The three top years, top 10%, ended because we filed it a year ago and it got approved, or 2 years ago and it got approved a year ago, ended at the end of 2011. So it's based upon the three previous years, top 10 capacity, and just looking briefly through that, the numbers back then were about 23, the top numbers were about 23, 22,000 gallons a day. And then the average was what I said. But there, let me try to give a short answer. Even with that, there is, by nature, there's a conservative factor put into that. I said top 10%. Wastewater systems have a lot of resilience. They are biological. Operators, including my own operators of the system, understand the system itself, and the design and permit limits don't necessarily mean what the system can produce or protect. I'm very confident that this system can handle all of what we talked about tonight, including the concerns raised by the Vice President. So I hope I answered that question. What is the life of the system if it were to stay, if it was permanently in there? I think I answered that before, and that is, again, wastewater systems don't care whether the waste comes from a mile away or 100 feet away. Wastewater is wastewater. The plant is designed for a certain amount. It can treat actually more than the amount. And if it's capped at 360 EDUs, that's where it will end. We will not add any more, and we'll operate it by permit. And it's our responsibility if there's a problem, which is part of the answer to the third question, which is, once Tidewater owns a wastewater or water system, if there are any problems, violations, somebody does a midnight dumping, it's our responsibility. We are a regulated wastewater utility. We fix it, and if we fix it in a way that is prudent, we don't spend a lot of money. If we spend a lot of money, then at some future time, we go back to the Public Service Commission and ask for rates to be increased to cover those expenses. But it is a lag process. We are not like a private entity where you go fix it and charge your customer. There's always a lag in regulated utility financing. And if there was any problem, it's our responsibility to find the problem, fix it, report it to DNREC, and not worry about from whence the financing comes. We're owned by Middlesex Water Company, has been in business for 115 years. We have an extremely high CapEx availability, and they're our bank. And there's never been a problem getting capital improvement money.
Let me ask a question a different way. If I were a resident of the retreat, the two things I'd want to know is, number one, if there is an issue, is the cost of resolving that issue going to be spread across all the users, you know, in both spots? That's one question. And the other question is about the system. I think for those of us who aren't in the wastewater business and so on, and maybe don't understand these are odd things, or I certainly don't understand them all from an engineering perspective. But you know, your street corner common sense might lead you to think that if you have more capacity, more stuff flowing through that system, the system is being used more, it's going to wear out faster. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And can you kind of speak to that issue? I mean, is it sort of like a washing machine that it's really about the number of times you use it, not how big the load is?
Well, it's a little bit of that. I tried to say this before. When you're at above a 10% capacity at a treatment plant, the treatment plant's running. Every part is running. It's going to run less efficiently when it's at low capacity,
right.
Honestly.
Right.
So our preventive maintenance, our actual maintenance, is almost irrespective of the volume.
Okay.
Our operators are required to go in there X number of hours every day, whether it's a winter day or a summer day. So the cost is inconsequential difference between the two. If there is an improvement that's needed that is a large capital expense, and it results in something where we cannot just, quote, eat the cost, then eventually all the users of that system will be asked to pay for it, subject to the Public Service Commission approval. And you all followed our trials and tribulations a couple of years ago when we tried to get our rates increased. So it's not a simple process.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay, anyone on the commission have any questions? There being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.